You are listening to the cycling podcast Femina, supported by Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004.
This episode of the cycling podcast Femina was recorded a few days before we all heard of the death of Sharon Laws, the former Olympian and British champion who died from cervical cancer. Sharon was only 43. I met her at La Course in Marseille earlier this year, and as so many people who know her well are saying, I find her to be incredibly warm, with a wonderful lively spirit and absolutely passionate about cycling. Sharon will be and already is dearly missed in the cycling community. Our thoughts are with Sharon's family.
Hello, my name is Richard Moore. I'm with, once again, Orla Shinawee.
Hello, Richard.
For episode something, insert number here, of the cycling podcast Femina. December. We're into December.
We are indeed. I know.
You skipped a month, Orla. Are you feeling a bit out of the loop?
Yeah, I was left out for a month. I was just saying,
just thought we'd bench you. It's the budget, you know?
I'm so costly. I think we'd done so much, though. We'd had the West End show. We had the cycling podcast dinner the next day. And I think for the sake of our friendship, you decided, you know what, let's keep a bit of distance for the rest of November, Orla. See you in December.
I'd had enough of you by that point.
The feeling was mutual, love.
Last month, we heard from Hannah Barnes and Mika Kruger from a conversation that I had with them in Rafa Manchester earlier this year. Hope you enjoyed it. A month before that was Tiffany Cromwell. That's when we were in Monaco, wasn't it? This month we are, well, we're kind of reflecting on the year and wishing a Merry Christmas. We'll get to all that, won't we?
Oh, yeah.
We'll announce, although you probably know already, our Pedaleuse de Charme, that which marks the launch, which should be imminently, of the range of Pedaleuse de Charme clothing. Rafa are producing that, our main sponsor.
If you actually don't know who won.
Well, the suspense must be killing you. You'll find out. And you can get a Pedaleuse de Charme t-shirt in early December. If you go to thecyclingpodcast.com shop, it'll take you to our page on the Rafa website. And I think the jerseys are coming in January, so keep an eye on that. We're going to talk mainly in this episode about sponsorship and about how the women's teams, some of the top teams are funded and who funds them, because a big talking point always is, why are there not more men's teams backing women's teams? And it came out of a conversation with Bob Varney, who runs Drops, I think, where he and others have pointed out that if all of the men's World Tour teams had women's teams, would there be space for a Bulls Dolmans or a Drops or a WNT? And we will hear from the man behind Bulls Dolmans. They've just extended their sponsorship, actually, of the team, so they're carrying on for a couple more years at least. And we'll hear from WNT, which is a very interesting team company based in Germany. I was whisked off to Germany to their sort of team bonding get-together.
Make it sound very glamorous. Go-karting. Was it Ryanair?
Go-karting, actually.
Oh, very good.
And it was actually right on the Austrian border. But we'll get to that. We'll hear about that in the final part. It was a really, really fun couple of days. Quite interesting. But Orla, you were working at the Ruler Classic recently as well, weren't you? And you spoke to former UCI president.
Yeah, Brian Cookson. When you said at the top of the episode that we were chatting about sponsorship, it's something that as a topic itself, as a topic title, might sound very dry, but actually, as I found out post my interview with Brian Cookson, creates an awful lot of debate, an awful lot of strong argument. Certainly on Twitter, I got myself embroiled in a bit of a Twitter spat, we like to call it, off the back of Brian Cookson's announcement, which I tweeted out. And his announcement being, which I'm sure many of our listeners will be aware of by now, is that after being voted out of the president's office at the UCI, he wants to start a new top tier women's team. So he wants to bring in big sponsors. He wants to make it as professional as possible. And so once he'd made that announcement on stage, I spoke to him backstage afterwards, and here's what he had to say.
Essentially, I'm at the beginning of my thinking on this, and it's almost, to call it an announcement with a capital A, is probably over-egging it a bit. To be honest, what I'm saying now is that I think there's a fantastic opportunity out there at the moment for a top-level women's team to come along. I'm interested in trying to stimulate and help make that happen. I'm talking to a number of organisations, companies, potential sponsors and so on about how we would make that happen in a year's time, in 2000. 2019 season, if all goes to plan, the UCI is going to have a two-tier team structure for women's teams, so there'll be UCI Women's World Tour teams. There might only be a handful at the start, but what I'm saying is there's a fantastic opportunity out there now for a manufacturer of bikes and equipment, for a clothing manufacturer, for a title sponsor perhaps from outside of cycling, but somebody who wants to work with cycling to produce a team that is not only iconic in terms of its achievements and success levels and gets to the very, very top of women's cycling, but also has a kind of in-depth link through to participation that can use the success of the elite level riders to motivate and inspire other women to get involved in cycling for their health, fitness, enjoyment, fun, and all the rest of it. And I just think now I've still got a little bit of currency, if you like, as a recent president of UCI. I think when I was president of UCI, we did a lot of good things that have helped women's cycling progress in terms of equalising prize money at world championships, producing the Women's World Tour calendar and so on, and helped raise that standard. There's a long way to go. There are some things that I would have liked to have been able to do, like guarantee a minimum salary for women, but at the moment, the economy and size of women's cycling is not strong enough or hasn't been strong enough to support that. But I think now we're seeing quite quickly an opportunity where there's a sea change in the media, a sea change in the public's attitude to all women's sport, not just cycling. And I think that in the next next year or so, we've got the possibility of putting together something absolutely unique and special, and driving that, not just, as I say, at the elite level, but as a means of helping, you know, our national federation, British Cycling, maybe other national federations around the world, to get more women involved in cycling.
The ambitions sound very Sky-esque, as I said on stage earlier, in terms of hoping to be the best team in the world, encouraging participation. That's certainly something that Team Sky used to do. Is that Team Sky model one that you would be hoping to follow or imitate in any way?
Well, I think there are many, many great qualities of Team Sky. It has set a new standard. In some ways, it's a little different from the original ethos that the team had when we helped establish it from British Cycling when I was the president there. But, you know, I'm not criticising anybody there. I think they've done a great job. They've taken it in the commercial and promotional direction that the sponsors wanted it to go, and that's fine. I think they've made a mistake in not having a women's team, frankly, and I think that will be a simple thing that they could do to improve their public image. But, you know, they may or may not want to do that, and that's where I say that compulsion, I don't think, is the right way. If it doesn't work for a sponsor, for a team, then that's fine. If it doesn't work for an event organiser or their sponsors, that's fine. Find others. Let's try and help the women create their own monuments, their own classics, their own grand tours. That process is already underway. There are certain well-known events that are really high standard. Some of them are associated with men's events. Some of them are not. So what I'm saying is, let's try now to do with the teams what has happened with a number of the World Tour, Women's World Tour events, that they've all shifted to a higher standard. Under the impetus of the UCI, they have said, you know what, we can do a better job here. We want to try harder. We want to give the women the theatre that they deserve for their talents and skills. And I think, you know, there are some great teams out there already, and, you know, I wouldn't criticise any of them, and those people are working really hard. But I think there's an opportunity now for someone else to come in and say, you know what, let's not just have two or three teams that are capable of riding at a Women's World Tour level consistently and at a high standard throughout the year. Let's aim for five or six teams, and I think, you know, there's a good opportunity there to do one that, you know, and whilst I've got some currency as a recent UCI president, people know who I am, if I say this is something that I'd like to help make happen, then I'm hoping that other people will come out of the woodwork and say, you know what, we'd like to be part of this idea, so let's see what happens.
So that was former UCI President Brian Cookson speaking to you, Orla, at the Ruler Classic, and revealing his plans to set up a women's pro team. Now, you sort of tweeted about it, didn't you? I don't think the response was universally positive, surprisingly.
No, it certainly wasn't universally positive. In fact, there was barely a positive comment which I was really surprised by, because I thought Brian Cookson, and whatever you think of him as a man, whatever you think of him as he was as a president, has come out of the most important, influential role in cycling. He's been in charge of every single part of it and looked at every single part of it. And he has thought, where is the future of cycling? It's in women's cycling. I thought that was a great reflection of women's cycling. And also bringing on board, as he wants to do, big sponsors as well into this team, which introduces more money into the sport, I thought can only be a good thing. However, a lot of the response I got on Twitter was that Brian Cookson shouldn't be trying to start a new team. I mean, categorically, people were saying he shouldn't start a new team. Instead, he should be concentrating on introducing a minimum wage. And I think a lot of that obviously comes from Brian Cookson not introducing a minimum wage as president, but he is no longer president.
Which was one of his manifesto pledges back then. I'm surprised with Orla to hear there was some negativity on Twitter.
Of all media, I know. I mean, crazy. But, you know, people were quite vitriolic against Brian Cookson. And I think in his defence, we do have to remember where women's cycling was when he came into office and where it is now. And yeah, he did have a strong manifesto in terms of women's cycling. He didn't deliver on everything. But surprise, surprise, leadership is about pragmatism, compromise, as well as trying to deliver to the best of your ability. And I think that as imperfect as the Women's World Tour is, it does still exist. And I think it's much better than we had before. And I think we do have a better state of cycling. And I also don't see how trying to introduce a new well-sponsored team can in any way be to the detriment of introducing a minimum wage. Surely introducing more money can only be a good thing. The more sponsors we have, the more high-profile people we have, the more likely that we not only introduce the minimum wage, but that we start to pay the top riders a decent salary. I know that some of them are on good money, but what we'd like to see is more of that across the board. And for that, you do need extra money, because where is the money for this minimum wage going to come from? And some comments that I got as well was that, well, if some of the bottom teams have to go by the wayside, if we have to have a two-tiered system in women's cycling, so be it. The UCI are planning for exactly that in 2 years' time, and I think that probably 2 years' time is a good time frame for it. If we were to do it straight away, as some people seem to want to do, then you are cutting off a big old chunk of women's cycling. How many will be left at the top? That's the question. How many will be able to afford it? And will we see teams at the bottom tier then disappear completely because they don't have access to the very limited amount of television coverage, newspaper coverage that we've got even at the moment? And I think that we do, unfortunately, have to take stock and realise and remember that we do live in an unequal world, even still in 2017. And I do welcome men who are new to this cause, but having spent a lifetime being a woman, I know that we're not paid the same amount of money. We don't still have the same amount of power across the board that men do. So the question is not whether this is unfair, but what can we do about it? And maybe let's stop comparing women's cycling to men's cycling and saying, well, in men's cycling, the riders don't have to do more, the teams don't have to do more than ride their bikes to get the money that they are owed. Let's just look at women's cycling as it is. And if we don't have a minimum wage, what can we do? Can we have teams more engaged with their sponsors? Can we have teams showing sponsors what they can bring in terms of brand ambassadorship, engagement in wellness programs? Can the riders do more with their social media? Or not more, just different things with their social media to become stronger ambassadors for the sponsors? Just are there ways that we can engage with the public more than we're doing at the moment and stop the comparison with men's cycling? And I would say one final thing, which is, and then I will step off my soapbox, but for anyone who does sort of sit at home and shout about the need for a minimum wage, by all means shout, because the louder that becomes, the more difficult it is to ignore. However, simply shouting alone will do nothing. Do something about it as well. So, you know, if all you do is tell your friends how wonderful women's cycling is, encourage one extra person to watch it, to watch whatever recent highlights on YouTube, for example, the more hits that you get for those highlights on YouTube, the more proof we have that there is an audience out there, and the more likely it is that more sponsors will come in to the sport, and then we'll have not only a minimum wage, but better salaries across the board.
Do you want a hand down there, Orla? Do you want to,
it's quite high up here, actually. Yeah, let me jump.
Yeah.
Boom.
No, but what came out of, and it's funny how a story like that can be hijacked by an issue like the minimum wage, which is one of the flagship issues, I guess, for a lot of people who follow and support women's cycling. I don't really understand why it's such a priority when there's an awful lot else that needs to grow and develop, I think, before it becomes tenable. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because speaking to Tiffany Cromwell a couple of months ago when we went to see her, she felt the same. You know, her point about it was quite nuanced, and it's very simplistic to say, you know, minimum wage will sort a lot of problems out. I think it would also create some problems. And that's not to say that it wouldn't be a good thing. Of course, it would be a good thing. But, you know, the news of Brian Cookson's team got a little bit hijacked by that. Did you not then have a conversation, though? Because a lot of these people arguing over this thing are actually wanting the same thing, ultimately. Did you not then have a conversation with Catherine Bertin, who was quite vocal in some of the points that she made to you?
Yes, I did. And Catherine is a brilliant advocate of women's cycling and progress in women's cycling. You know, she's very active in it. And I reached out to her on Twitter and asked if I could chat to her on the phone so we could talk things through. And we did have a brilliant conversation, which unfortunately was recorded, but that recording went astray somehow or other, her end, unfortunately. But I will hope to repeat that in some way and have that chat for the cycling podcast, because what was really interesting, she had some brilliant points to make. And I suspected when I spoke to her on Twitter that we probably wanted the exact same thing or very close to the exact same thing.
You can almost hear a Belinda Carlisle song here.
Which is?
Come on.
Oh no.
We want the same thing.
I'm thinking Circle in the Sand. I was thinking, what's that got
That's
to do with it?
That's not the one that I was thinking of.
I don't know that one. You're clearly a bigger Belinda Carlisle fan than I am.
I'm hijacking this now, Belinda Carlisle.
So anyway, I chatted to Catherine and we did really want the same things. Richard's now air singing and just had slightly different ways of going about it. But we did agree on a lot of things. And that is obviously the danger with the Twitter debate. We're blessed now with an extra 140 characters with which to confuse ourselves and trip over ourselves, but you just can't have a normal, intelligent, thought through conversation on Twitter. So I will hope to get Catherine back on again. But we agreed in that it is nonsensical to argue against the minimum wage. It's what everybody would want. But neither of us had an answer as to how we could do that straight away. And I made the point that women's cycling is not a sport that is governed by a few multimillionaires who are siphoning off money elsewhere and greedily storing the money instead of filtering it down through the sport. There just isn't an awful lot of money in the sport at the moment. And the key is to try to work out how to increase that pot of money, first of all, I think, or at least at the same time as then working out how to distribute it in a more even way.
You are listening to the cycling podcast Femina, supported by Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004.
Thank you very much to Rafa for sponsoring cycling podcast Femina. And as I mentioned at the start, they produce this Pedalers de Charme t-shirt and jersey that will be available in the new year. Lovely stuff it is too. Arla, you'll be getting your t-shirt very soon. I know you've been waiting for it for a while. Patiently. You've calmed down, I think, a little bit. Are you enjoying my comfortable chair?
I'm very much your leather swivel chair.
It's nice, isn't it?
Yeah, I've got the comfy one this time. Yes, I have calmed down. Yeah. I apologise.
We established in the break there that we're blazing a trail here because we have equal pay in the second podcast Femina.
Equal cups of tea.
Everything's equal, although you get a nicer chair. Pedalers de Charme then. Who was our Pedalers de Charme? We ran a Twitter poll for the year. And, Tiffany Cromwell insisted that Chantal Black be on it. That was her nomination. Mm-hmm. Corin Rivera was on it, a very worthy nominee.
Who did you vote for? Did you vote?
Who else was on it? Kasia Nviadoma was on it. Mm-hmm. And Annemiek van Vleuten. Now, Anna van der Breggen wasn't on it, and she probably should have been on it. But, you know, Pedalers de Charme, Pedaler de Charme.
I miss that Anna van der Breggen wasn't on it. When you sent me the list of contenders, she was definitely on it.
It's supposed to be counterintuitive, isn't it?
Okay.
You know, it's not supposed to be the obvious one. However,
true.
The obvious one did win in the event. Annemiek van Vleuten, can't really argue with that.
No,
so,
she would have been mine, to be fair, even with Anna van der Breggen's brilliance. I think Annemiek van Vleuten, definitely. She personifies, I think, what we would like Pedalers de Charme to represent.
Yeah, I think so. And yeah, there were some nice moments, weren't there? The World Championships after the time trial when she greeted her mother and you know, emotional. And after what happened to her in Rio, etc., that was kind of the shadow from which she was coming back, I guess. And yeah, we'll get a t-shirt to her. I'm sure she'll be thrilled.
I think that'll be the cherry on her Christmas cake, quite honestly. What a wonderful year she's had. And to top that off, she's got a cotton t-shirt
But thanks, Corn Rivera, for campaigning on your own behalf. That was nice to see. Mm. A bit of engagement there. Yeah. It didn't quite work, but maybe next year.
Yeah.
So anyway, we'll get a t-shirt to Annemiek van Vleuten. As I say, you can get the t-shirts at thecyclingpodcast.com if you go to the shop. Great Christmas present, obviously. We have, I mentioned at this point, we've got a book coming out in March the 1st next year, Journey Through the Cycling Year. It's a cycling podcast book, but Orla, you've got a chapter in there on La Course. And there's also a chapter in there by Ashley Moolman-Passio, the South African rider who's written about a tale of two tours, about the Giro Rosa and the Women's Tour. Just very interesting to compare those two races and how each sort of symbolises a different cycling culture. So yeah, the book will be available March the 1st next year, and we're excited about that. And
I can't wait to read everybody else's chapters, actually, because you've been so sort of consumed in your own. It'll be lovely to read it all together.
I think it's a good read. But yeah, that was a lot of fun to work on. It's sort of diary style, a lot of it. Now, Orla, you have spoken to Erwin Jansen of the Dolmans Landscaping Group. He's the director there. And they, of course, are with Bulls, sponsor the Bulls Dolmans women's professional team, the top team in women's cycling, with a real galaxy of stars: Anna van der Breggen, Lizzie Deignan, the new world champion Chantal Black, of course, Megan Garnier. And it was very interesting to hear what he had to say about their involvement with the team and about women's cycling in general. Here he is, Erwin Jansen.
So talk to me about the start of the team then. Tell me how it all started out.
Yeah, we started around 6 years ago, and then as a small Dutch team, and we only looked for Dutch young talents. So girls, they make the step from the juniors to the women elite. Yeah, we did it 2 years. It was really good, and we race a lot, and we give them a nice professional platform, but we never win a race. And so after 2 years, I thought, okay, now I want to win some races. So and then, I looked for new big sponsors, and I found in Bulls a good companion. And then we make a plan for 4 years, and in that 4 years, we want to grow to the top three of the world. As a team, and of course win World Tour races. So step by step we grow. Of course we have a nice budget, and now we are with a budget, I think, with the top three of the women's cycling. But it's of course not only the money, because what you see is we have a lot of girls. They start in our team. For example, Lizzie, she started and she was the number 12 of the UCI ranking, and then she grew in our team to the number one, and she won all, became world champion, etc., etc. Megan Garnier, she starts in our team at the number 36, and last year she won a lot, and she became the number one of the world. She won the Giro. So yeah, I think what we do very good is we have a strong management. We have a very good Danny Stam, the team directeur sportif. I think what we do is a kind of a familiar atmosphere. The girls like to race, and I think we arrange everything very good. So they feel okay, and then you see step by step that the atmosphere is growing, and they want to fight for each other.
So you say it's not just the money. I mean, that must be a big factor, but is there one single factor that contributes most to your professionalism as a team, if it's not money, or it may be?
Of course, it's a combination for money, but you have to use the money on the good way. I think we do that good, and there are teams with the same budget, but they are on the ranking on 4 or on 6 or on 5. So, yeah, I think it's from us the feeling we put in the team, and you see also for the girls, they like it when. We have also a lot of sponsors who come and watch it, so they feel it's a kind of really pretty atmosphere to make their goals, and not only from there is a big multinational who is the sponsor, and they only watch how many minutes are we on television, etc., etc. So the passion for the sports, what is also from my side, I think that's really important. I train sometimes with the girls, and they like it. So we do crazy things. Last December, we went out of season to a ski holiday, and they told her, "Are you crazy? We go skiing?" And van der Breggen, she never made skiing at Rabobank. It was in the contract. And we said, "Okay, we go ski." It's 3 months before okay, easy on. And then we did it, and it was a really great team building session. So I think that's one of our successes.
I wanted to ask about the skiing in particular, because that was one thing that in any professional team, never mind cycling, it would be the probably one of the absolute no-nos. You are not allowed to put your feet onto a pair of skis while you are in a contract with us. Were you not terrified that would go wrong, or was the risk outweighed by the knowledge that it would bring the girls together?
Of course, we thought, okay, when there is happening something, we come in the newspapers and they tell us, are you crazy, what you're doing? But yeah, we really thought about it and chose for it, and we thought, okay, this is such an important team-building session on the beginning of the season with new riders, because otherwise they start and they go into a training camp. They are directly in a formal position, and they directly train, look, watch each other. And now we were skiing, and we made fun, and we go out and drink 2 days, and it was great. And everybody knows each other then, and yeah, you start the season in a very different way.
So for you, why women's cycling? Why not men's cycling? Why not any other sport?
Yeah, okay. I started 12 years ago as a co-sponsor in another team in women's cycling. And okay, I saw the evolution of the sports. Yeah, and I saw the possibilities of the sports. And yeah, in men's cycling, that's of course a bridge far, much far. And also with the budget, of course. If you look, we have a budget all in from around 2 million. And yeah, look to Sky, they have 25 or 30 million. But I see with that budget, we can do a lot in the evolution of women's cycling. And that gives me a much better feeling than becoming a co-sponsor at a men's team.
Which of the teams in the women's peloton do you think share that vision with you? Which are the teams that you're most impressed by in terms of their professionalism, in terms of how they want to advance this sport?
Yeah, you see the last years, of course, the women's cycling is growing and growing. You can look when 3 years ago when we had that bus, it was in women's cycling, was really impressive or really professional. And now if you look Sunweb and the team of Voss, 3WM, and also a Lotto, they are. So you see that in general, the women's cycling is growing. But yeah, I have a lot of respect now how Sunweb is doing their job. Really professional, okay. They are combined with the men. And that's, of course, also, I think, pretty unique what we do. We are the only top women's cycling team who is not linked on a men's team. Okay, and Wiggle, of course, then also. Wiggle is also a very nice team, but I think the way we do it is really special.
Would you like to reverse the model and maybe one day start a men's team to go alongside the women's?
No, I have not that ambition.
The cycling podcast Femina is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you to Science and Sport for sponsoring the cycling podcast Femina, and a reminder that you can get 20% off all your Science and Sport products at scienceandsport.com with the code CPAUG20. Just enter that at the checkout, CPAUG20. And before the break, we heard from Erwin Jansen of the Dolmans Landscaping Group, one half, of course, of the Bols Dolmans professional team. Really interesting. I haven't heard him speak before, and you know, the thought that's gone into the team, the level of professionalism, the passion as well that really comes across is great to hear.
Yeah, and he seems, you know, quite involved in it in a hands-on way, as well as emotionally. I mean, he runs a garden landscaping business, you know, but he's obviously completely immersed himself into this. We saw him at the Ardennes Classics, hanging around the bus and being with the team, and they've just impressed so much, haven't they? I mean, in 2016 they were so dominant, absolutely untouchable by the looks of it. And what's brilliant in 2017 is that they topped the rankings once again, but they weren't untouchable anymore, and they weren't as dominant anymore. And Sunweb, who were second in the rankings, had such a great year. And if you look at some of the transfers now, I think Canyon SRAM are looking really exciting for next year with the second Barn sister, with Cassia Novodoma. And I think it's a really, really healthy, exciting time when you see that Bowles Dolmans haven't dropped their level, but other teams have risen up to be at their level, and that's brilliant.
And, you know, a lot of their successes were down to one rider, Anna van der Breggen, who joined the team this year. So, you know, it suggests that things are more fluid than they used to be in women's cycling. And that's true of the transfer market as well. I think we mentioned this before, but that's been really a new phenomenon to see so much movement and you know, sideways movements, riders, you know, moving sort of, you know, Kanya Schramm to wiggle high five in the case of Lisa Brenner, for example, who I met actually at the WNT get together. She was there because she's become quite friendly with the owner of the team, Claude's son. So I spoke to her, and we'll hear that interview in a future episode of the Cycling Podcast Femina. I like the idea of the skiing as well. I might try and wangle a
press invite.
A ski holiday with Bowles Dolmans.
Yeah, because they're doing it again this year, actually. And I spoke to Emma Wade, who's the agent of Lizzie Deignan, and she was a little bit terrified that anything would go wrong at this ski trip, as I guess anyone involved in the team would be. But I think that's brilliant, and it's great that they're having fun. And you know, that kind of thing works so well in terms of building a team together. So it's good that they're enjoying it, that they're having fun with it, and that remembering what it's all about, really.
Well, speaking of team building, Orla, WNT is a team that we've featured on the podcast before, because an old friend of mine, Graham Hurd, who's a former Scottish national coach, is the director there. This was his first season running the team, really. The team's been around for a few years, but it's developed from a club team into a professional team. And it's very much a development team, a lot of young riders there. Now, I was invited to their team get together a few weeks ago. I didn't really study the details. I'm not sure I was given all the details about exactly where I was going, but I flew to Munich and was picked up in Munich and bundled into a car.
Bundled. Some very sinister.
No.
You were whisked away earlier. Now you were bundled into a car.
Away. I was whisked away 2 hours in the direction of Austria, and we're right on the border of Austria. The company is based in Kempten, which sounds like it should be in England.
In England, yeah.
But it's Kempten, and it's in Bavaria, which is actually Lisa Brenner's hometown.
Oh.
That's how she's got to know Claude Sun, the managing director of WNT. Now, WNT make tools, and it's quite an impressive company. They're heavily involved in the bike industry through the precision tools that they make, and the factory there, and, you know, huge setup. I mean, really a very big company indeed. We'll hear a little bit about it from Claude's son, who, as I say, is the MD, and the team is very much his passion project. He's from Brittany, in fact, and used to ride in the company of Bernard Hinault as a youngster, and raced as well, and was quite serious about it before he studied engineering and has ended up running this big company. And, you know, interesting, like Bowles Dolmans, that they've chosen to back women's cycling, as well as the team. They sponsor quite a lot of the big races, the Madrid Challenge, Grand Prix Plouay, which is obviously his home race as well. So anyway, I went over there and met the team, met a lot of the riders. Eileen Rowe is somebody who a lot of people in Britain will know. She's been British Critérium champion a few times, a top rider, rode for Wiggle High Five a couple of years ago. We'll hear a little bit from her. We'll hear from Claude Sun, from Graham Hurd, from a couple of the other riders. We'll hear from Lynn Tuttenberg, who is only 19 years old. Now, her name will be very familiar because she is the niece of Ina Yoko Tuttenberg, one of the real pioneers of women's cycling, won lots of very big races. And she's really part of a cycling family. Her grandfather is a coach. Her father was a professional, and her uncle was a professional as well, who rode for Sven Tuttenberg, rode for Telecom, and Lars Tuttenberg rode for various teams, but also has sort of found his niche more in management, worked as a technical director for HTC Columbia and Green Edge. He's just recently been appointed performance director for Bora Hansgrohe, Peter Sagan's team. So she is steeped in cycling. And I was just looking her up yesterday, Lynn Tuttenberg, and she's a real character. But I found this article from 2012 on Clara Hughes's website. She was a former teammate of Ina Tuttenberg. And there are pictures here of her going for a ride with Ina and her nephew and niece tagging along. There is Lynn Tuttenberg, age 12, and they did a 70-kilometre ride.
At the age of 12.
And it's absolutely brilliant. So look that up, clara-hughes.com.
Is that her or her nephew in the HTC?
They're both in HTC kit.
That's too
because,
cute.
Because Ina rode for HTC, of course, as did Clara Hughes. So, yeah, really, really fascinating read. And it's interesting to see how they look then, because her brother, Lynn's brother, is still racing as well, as far as I can make it. Tim Tuttenberg, he's a couple of years younger than her, so he'll be 17 now. So look out for them. But we'll hear a bit from her as well later on in this clip. Let's hear it now.
We were looking for a director sportive who is able to manage a woman team. So it's not my strength, you know. I know the cycling for men, for women, I think you need a director sportive with a lot of experience of a woman team, because they ride differently, they think differently, you have to manage the team a little bit differently than men team. My name is Claude Saint, so my background is cyclist anyway.
You were explaining, you're not just a sponsor who gives a check to a team to run the team, you actually own the team, the riders are employees of the company.
I consider them like all the employees worldwide. They've got a job to do. They have to represent the company. They do it very well. This is the reason why they have to know how we think, on what we expect from them. And then they can transport the company value to the customers.
You were showing me some figures earlier about the return that sponsors can get from cycling. Do you feel that it's working for you?
Yeah, we did a lot of analysis. So, for example, Women Tour, I was always interesting from Brückenbauer, from Bora 1 to 10. I asked always another company to make an analysis return of invest. It was 1 to 8, 1 to 10, so it's correct.
So, it is a very, every very dollar nice, it's or a every very euro nice, you put in, yeah. 10 euros back.
Yeah. Yeah. Or the calculation is, what should I do, what should I invest to have the same investment in sport, yeah, you know. Yeah. So on if you come on TV, on everything now, with pro tour cycling, on, you've got a positive image. But it's a period of time, you should not go there and say, okay, now I invest 1 euro, I want 10 euro next day. It's not easy.
It's a long-term plan.
On brand awareness, take long years, you know. On this is the reason why I say always step by step, or with such team or such a project, it takes years. You should not go too fast.
With the size of investment you're making in the women's team, what would that get you if you were to put the same amount of money into a men's team?
I said I will have to double or triple my budget first. It will be not the same effect on communication. For our market, for our customers, I think women are more something different in our world.
It's a male-dominated industry.
Yeah.
Having a women's team is
it's something
your
fresh. Yeah. You know what I mean? Fresh.
Team it's an international team now for next year, 10 riders, 6 nationalities. That's obviously a deliberate strategy, but how do you go about talent spotting and selecting riders, a lot of them young and unproven? What are you looking for?
There's two main driving factors behind it. You know, one, the team started off as a UK club team and then progressed to UCI level, so you're not globalising, but you're definitely broadening your horizons to cover the whole of Europe, which, not by accident, links really well with, you know, WNT's business activity, which is Europe-wide. So, you know, from a business point of view and from a performance point of view, it makes sense to cast your eye wide, to look for the kind of riders who, you know, A, have got potential to develop, and B, fit the company values for WNT. You know, we see ourselves as a team, you know, primarily as a development team, not just for products affected by WNT tooling, but also for people, because it's the project itself is not an overnight thing. It's very much about sustainability and being stable, and basically what we're trying to do is grow a team. We're not really motivated by buying one, but I think the roster we've ended up with now is really interesting, and it's a really exciting group. You know, we go from first year senior with Lynn Tuttenberg at one end to 30 years old Lydia Boylan, who's a triple Irish champion and now a European medalist on the track. So we've basically got a 12 year spread, although, you know, the trend is young. We've got a lot of riders early 20s or younger, and that's, for me, that gives us room to develop as a team, but also them room to develop as people. And, you know, if we have to accept that kind of developmental role and actively seek it, then ultimately we have to accept that riders will be with us for one or two seasons. And, you know, and if they're good and if they progress, they will get better offers from bigger teams. For us, that's part of the process, and it's something that's, you know, you don't always actively seek it, but it's success, isn't it? You know, and it's in a different way from just measuring on the basis of, you know, how many good riders you have in your team.
I'm Melissa Lalva from PWNT. Never done go-kart before, but it's actually really, really fun, and I feel like I'm getting into the swing of things a bit now. So yeah.
You're pretty good.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it a lot, actually.
You're a natural. Are you? Did you know that you had this in you?
No, I didn't. I was well scared when I first got on, but now I'm getting into the swing of things. It's just like riding a bike.
I can tell that you're kind of eager here to get back in, aren't you? We're doing a relay thing where we've got our co-drivers out there, our teammates out there just now, and they do 10 minutes, then hand over for us to do 10 minutes. How are you getting on in the race?
We were coming second, but Lynn just had a crash, so I think we might have slipped down a few places, but we're doing all right.
And otherwise, are you excited for next year and to be here with the team and get to know some of your new teammates?
Yeah, we went through the team calendar yesterday, and it's actually really exciting. I'm getting on well with all the girls. It's a really nice bunch of girls to race with and train with. Really good.
I'll let you get your helmet back on.
Thank you.
So, God, this is team building.
Yeah, it's really team building.
I can tell you've been here before.
Yeah, I know exactly all the curve, all the time, everything.
you took me on the inside, but knocked me into the tires at one point.
I did it. Oh, yeah, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I didn't want to do it, you know, but I did recognize you. I'm so sorry. I'm really so sorry.
Who are you impressed by? Eileen Rowe looks very good.
Yeah, she's very aggressive.
Very aggressive. And in the car.
Yeah, she pushed my colleagues out of her track. like on the bike, you know, exactly like on the bike. You see the character exactly, this is the same on the race.
It's almost a transition time again, better get my helmet back on.
Yeah, okay, good luck.
Hi, I'm Anna Barigova, I'm 20 years old and I'm from Austria.
Is this bonding you with your teammates?
Yeah, I really like the team. We're more than like, we are more a family than a team. And yeah, I really like it. Everyone is really nice and we can really work together good and it's great.
Even here on the racetrack?
Yeah, now it's everyone for themselves a bit.
You're with Eileen, are you not?
Yeah, I'm with Eileen.
That's a lot of pressure.
It is actually. She's really good. I think she had some practice before.
It's quite competitive. People are taking it quite seriously.
Yeah, we are cyclists, so as soon you tell us it's a competition, we take it seriously and it is a competition.
Hello, I'm Lea Lynn Teutenberg and I'm riding for VNT Rotor for cycling.
Now, we've just finished go-karting. You were very, very good at go-karting.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun and it was really good.
You were told off, I think, as a group for driving too dangerously.
Yeah, I think it wasn't my fault, but you have to be, like, fighting to get your way.
But it's a new team. You've just joined. How get together like this? How has it been for you to meet the team, get to know the company a bit better, and meet some of your new teammates?
It was really nice. I'm just coming up from juniors and they're all like very nice and really like them, so looking forward for the 2 years.
And you're the youngest person on the team?
Yeah, I am, but it's okay. I'm going good with that.
You're from a cycling family. How do they feel about you becoming a cyclist yourself? Are they very interested in your career? Are they very supportive?
Yeah, they support me a lot, but it was not like, okay, you have to do cycling because everyone is doing. I did a lot of different sports before and it was they supported me too at this. So they really support me and help me as much as they can.
So I say you're the youngest person on the team. How does it feel to step into like a proper professional team and What are you looking forward to next year in particular?
Yeah, I'm really proud of riding for a pro team next year, and I think I can learn a lot from the others because they have more knowledge. So I'm really looking forward for that.
Your aunt is a real, you know, sort of legend, pioneer, I suppose, in women's cycling. Does she give you a lot of advice?
Yeah, I talk to her a lot and ask her if I have any questions, and she's helping me very good.
Are you a similar kind of rider to her?
No, definitely not. She was a sprinter and I'm really bad at sprinting, so...
When Claude talks about how much turnover this company actually makes, it's actually quite scary for a privately owned company. So it's nice to have a company that's doing so well, that's backing a women's team.
Reassuring. But what's it like though when you walk around the offices and you see how visible the team is? You know, there are pictures up, the calendars up. You get a sense that the team really means quite a lot to the company.
It does, yeah. They have, like you said, calendars nearly in every single room in the factory. And like Claude said, it is WNT that's actually your employer. You're part of the company. It's not just... The team is part of the company, and he says that you are representing the company, not just a cycling team, so... It's different. There isn't anything else that's out there.
So people go to work and look at pictures of you.
Quite scary thought, isn't it?
how have you enjoyed being part of the team this year? You know, Graham Heard, well, obviously, and Katie. There's a sort of Scottish contingent in the team. How have you enjoyed being part of it?
This year's been really refreshing. I mean, women's cycling is becoming a stronger state of affair. So this year was quite good for reassurance that the team actually has money for investment. It's not just a one-year deal. Like, Claude wants to make this team a development, so it's nice to be involved in something that will progress and hopefully bring the younger riders on that we've signed for next year to try and help them develop and launch them into the bigger category races.
Eileen, we've got a signed... Well, it's not signed yet, but I'm going to get you to sign it. Eileen Rowe, National Champions jersey, to give away to a lucky listener. We'll need to think of a question. What question should we set them? Really put you on the spot here, but...
Richard, you can't do that. You're taking me some sort of a...
I'm giving you time now. Your brain should be working now. Your brain should be working now.
So your listeners know Richard is actually sitting with the mic right below me, and I have no time whatsoever to come up with a question, and he's just sitting there waiting.
Come on. You can do it.
So there is a song that I get sung to me every time that somebody realises what my name is, and I've never heard it before. Richard actually started singing that song to me, and it's the first time I'd ever heard this song being sung. So I would like to use listeners to get in contact to win this competition of the jersey, and I'd like to know what song did Richard sing to me when he came here to do this interview.
So that was Eileen Rowe playing us out there. Eileen Rowe. I mentioned Katie Archibald, that is, of course, who's moving on to Wiggle High Five. I think Katie Archibald will miss Eileen Rowe because she's been a great teammate for her this year. Very, very capable bike rider, really, as in the go-kart, you know, handles herself very well in a bunch. A very skillful rider. The go-karting was quite a sobering experience for me, but it was very...
Was it grinding, Richard?
It was very grounding, quite literally. But it was.
Tell us where you came.
Oh, I was
humiliated. Last,
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Out of how many?
Oh well, however many there were, doesn't matter.
Who cares? Last is last.
Doesn't matter. But the thing about it was that I mentioned this in our other podcast, but the team building, it's a bit of a cliche and it's sort of mocked a little bit, the idea of, you know, companies or teams doing these activities. But when you go there and you take part in it, you observe it, it's very, very effective.
Of course.
I mean, Lynn Tudenberg there, you know, she's the youngest rider on the team, new to the team, 19 years old, just turning senior. And, you know, I saw her with the group, and she was quite, you know, understandably reserved and just slowly getting to know people. After the go-karting, it was the situation was transformed. You know, she was an accepted member of the team because she was extremely good. Mm. Her and Eileen were the best go-karters, and it had really altered the dynamics of the group in a very positive way. That was
and
fun
it sounded
to watch.
Like it was great fun as well. It was, you know, well, people was, having fun together just brings them together.
I didn't really have fun, but they had fun, and that was the main thing.
Let's face it, it wasn't all about you.
But I there's a bit of an edge to that comment, Orla.
Bitter at not being invited? No, not me.
As a German speaker, you'd have
gotten
on very well there.
Yeah.
The other thing was just
gesprochen, oder? No,
sure. But you know, going to the factory and the offices and seeing the setup there and having it, you know, I went with the writers on a tour of all that, which was given by Claude, and then going into the offices and seeing how visible the team is. There are bikes, there are jerseys everywhere, there are pictures, calendars of the team. They're very, very visible. And for the writers, that must have felt really quite nice to really feel part of the company, and that they're really being backed and supported by this big company.
And you know what as well? That's the first time I've heard anybody quantify the return on women's cycling. 1 to 8, 1 to 10. That's more than I thought it would be, actually. That's quite encouraging, isn't it?
I don't know how you measure that, really. But
well, I guess they must have measures, though, surely.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. And they're still quite new to it at this level. They're building up. They're a small team. They're not one of the top teams at all. But they certainly have aspirations to develop, and as Graham Hurd said, to develop some top young riders as well. So exciting times for WNT, and thanks very much to them for having me there. Eileen did mention the competition.
Mm.
What was the song that I
Can
sang?
I guess?
No.
Michelle, no, yeah. Marbelle.
Nope. But do write in, email contact@thecyclingpodcast.com, send us a Facebook message, send us a Twitter message. We'll gather all these and pull a name out of the hat. In fact, we'll pull two names out of the hat because I've got two signed gilets. I hadn't actually pulled out the bag when I said it was a jersey. I didn't realise it's a gilet. So two British champions gilets. And I've actually got lots of other WNT kit to give away as prizes. We've got Katie Archibald rainbow skin suit, World Championship skin suit with her name on it. And it's really quite special. Got world champion, you know, rainbow banded track mitts and overshoes and other team jerseys and so on. Got quite a lot of stuff.
They're very cool, I have to say, especially the rainbow.
Very, very nice.
They're very cool.
Yeah. So if you want to win some of that, we thought we would ask you to tell us what has been your favourite moment of the Cycling Podcast Femina in 2017 and why. Tell us, this helps us as well. This is,
yeah, exactly.
This is kind of market research. But
I'm guessing my earlier stand in my soapbox won't be one of them.
Oh, I'm sure that'll be up there. But yeah, tell us what you've enjoyed and why, and we'll pick out some of our favourites and send them some prizes. Maybe chuck in a Peddlers to Charm t-shirt for somebody as well.
Yeah.
And I'm going to try and, you're flicking through a book there, Orla, that I've got, because I helped crowdfund a book called The Roadbook 2017, and it is a photographic book about the year in women's cycling.
And it is absolutely
beautiful.
It's so well done. I love it.
Velo Focus.
Going to get one.
Let me have a quick look at it, please, Orla.
Go for it. Just while you're doing that, if people want to maybe give us their t-shirt sizes with their entries in case we do throw in a few Peddlers to Charm t-shirts.
Good idea. That's a very good idea.
The more likely to wear them, really, if they fit. We've given a few ill-fitting t-shirts over the years. Not very attractive.
Yeah, the book is the work of Ballant Havas, who I know quite well, and Sean Robinson, and they cover women's cycling very closely. So it really is the year in women's cycling, and it's very beautiful.
It's a gem.
So yeah, look out for that. Maybe we'll try and get a copy of that for a future episode to give away as a prize if you're listening, Ballant. I think he does listen, so that'd be nice. Anyway, that's probably all for this month, Orla.
And this year.
Well, we'd like to say thank you very much to everybody who's listened this year. It has been great. It's our second year of the Cycling Podcast Feminana, our first full calendar year.
Yeah.
And the audience really has gone up a lot this year. It's doubled, really. So there's a lot of you listening, more and more people, hopefully, like us, understanding and learning more about women's cycling as we go.
As we go, yeah.
So that's been a lot of fun. What's been your highlight this year, Orla? I mean, we've had a few good moments.
I mean, I think my highlights are probably fairly obvious in that they're the races that I've been to. And I think that's probably a fairly good indicator to anyone who is interested in cycling. Go along and watch a few races, because the passion you develop for it and the excitement that you get from it is so much more intense when you go to any of the races. So for me, Flèche Wallonne, the Women's Tour, and Issoire. Probably Issoire was a standout for me, and that just because it was a beautiful day, it was a wonderful race, it was a majestic performance by Annemiek van Vleuten, and I just loved all of that, really. What was yours?
All of those things I enjoyed hugely. I enjoyed the Women's Tour in particular, and their day in the team car, that was good. I also enjoyed our event with Lizzie Dagnan in Leeds, that was good, especially the crowd, you know, that it was. She was on her home patch, and a lot of kids in the audience, and that was nice to see. And it was nice to see them and the way that they responded to her and through the questions and so on. That was really nice.
Actually, one of my highlights was a question from that night, and it was the little girl asking Lizzie about her pearl earrings and why she wasn't wearing them anymore. And I just loved the insight into that little girl's mind and the way that she clearly watches Lizzie and pays attention to every little detail. And I love now that we've got female cyclists who little girls can look to in that way and just idolise, I guess. You know, Lizzie was that little girl's idol, so that probably actually was my standout moment after all that.
That's what kind of, what I enjoyed about finding that old article about Lynn Tuttenberg, and, you know, 12-year-old, and she's carried on that path, you know, and now she's a professional rider. That's great to see. I enjoyed the meeting and chatting properly to Tiffany Cromwell as well in Monaco, because I thought we got a lot out of her. We were on a sort of time limit and we were watching the clock a bit, and it gave it a sort of intensity, I think. And she was really interesting, and we'll try and do more with Tiffany, I think.
Yeah, she's so generous with her experience and her thoughts. I thought she was brilliant.
Who can forget also the audio diary that Alexis Ryan kept for us at the Tour of California, which was a friend special this year. She was a natural at that, and I really enjoyed that. So that
maybe
was good
fun.
Maybe
do more of those next year.
Absolutely. Well, we've got plans to, it has, as I say, been a really good year, better than we could have imagined, I think, and certainly in terms of the audience. We're not that far behind our regular weekly podcast, which is wonderful. And we want to expand next year. That will be subject, obviously, to securing a bit of additional funding and so on. But we're working on that. And we want to expand, not to make it more regular than monthly, but to add additional episodes around the big races. So we would love to, for example, do daily podcasts from the Women's Tour, as an example. That's an aspiration. We'll try and make it happen next year, but we're certainly working on expanding it next year. The audience is clearly there and the material is certainly there. So
And you just get so much more stories really when you're at the races as well, don't you? So I think in terms of what you were saying and bringing the audience along with us and learning more as we go, I think that's the best way to do it. So hopefully for anyone who can't make it to any of the races, if we can bring them on our little journey, that would be lovely.
For real. Well, we better. We're off in for a bit of cycling podcast dinner tonight, Orla.
Bit of scran.
You're making tiramisu, I believe.
I'm making tiramisu for dessert. Lionel is making cassoulet, and Richard is making puffs of air to go by what I saw coming out of the oven earlier. Tiny little fragments of something that might just about.
They're going to look
hit
quite
some part
was,
of your mouth.
That was an experimental round. They'll look more impressive.
Starters
a bit
for
later on.
Leprechauns. Elves. That's what.
You left them out for Santa's elves. You laugh now, but we'll see. We'll see. Anyway, that'll be fun. We should wish everybody a Merry Christmas.
We should Merry Christmas,
and
everyone,
we'll
from the bottom
the
of our
year.
Hearts. Yes. Enjoy. I love Christmas. I hope everyone has a lovely one. Truly.
Thank you, Orla.
Thank you, Richard.
You are listening to the cycling podcast Femina, supported by Rafa. Celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004.